hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association finals resume later Wednesday night in Cleveland, Ohio, where the Cleveland Cavaliers will host the defending champion Golden State Warriors in Game 3 of the Best of 7 Championship Series. The Warriors won the first two games by big margins in their bid for a second consecutive NBA title. VOA sports reporter Tati Abeje joins us now with a preview of the basketball action. Sporty greetings, Tati.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The first two games of the NBA Finals have not lived up to expectations. The Warriors won both games by a combined 48 points, which is an NBA Finals record. The defending champions are winning despite the fact that their two-time league most valuable player, Stephen Curry, and his backcourt partner, Klay Thompson, are not playing up to their star capabilities. It's the role players for the Warriors, players like Draymond Green, Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, and Leandro Barbosa, who are playing well for a team that won a record 73 games during the regular season. According to Steph Curry, the Warriors still have a lot of work to do to win their second straight title.
We know they're going to make adjustments. We know they're going to come out with a sense of urgency, knowing the moment, but we need to have that same mentality because for what's at stake, if we are able to go up 3-0, that is a great position to be in. And that is the opportunity in front of us. So we can't get complacent. We can't celebrate anything because we haven't accomplished anything yet.
On the other hand, the Cavaliers have been playing very poorly. It seems like they didn't show up for the big stage. They've been outworked and out-hustled. Star players LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love have played decently as they combined to score 100 points in the first two games. However, reserve players like J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, Matthew Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert, and Channing Frye have not given them much production, combining to score only 43 points so far in the series. LeBron talks about how important Game 3 is.
We all can sit here and say that there's no way we can go down 3-0. You know, and I'm not a big history guy, even though I love the history of the sport, but I don't like to put myself in it. But coming back home and understanding this is our home floor and we've played some really good basketball, we can't afford to go down 3-0, and especially against this team. So it's a must-win for us.
I would definitely agree with LeBron. Game 3 is a must-win game for the Cavs, and he has to set the tone by attacking the basket early and often. If they lose, Cleveland would go down 0-3, and no team in NBA history has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit to win the NBA Finals. Game 3 tips off later Wednesday night at the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm VOA's Tati Abeje. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Tati. Now let's go to Juba, the capital of South Sudan, Africa's newest country. That's where veterans of the 22-year-long civil war with Sudan meet once a week to play wheelchair basketball. Disabled people in South Sudan face discrimination, high rates of substance abuse, and unemployment. But these men show what else is possible. Reporter Jason Patinkin has the story for VOA from Juba.
The men meet at Juba Basketball Stadium every Tuesday. Some are war veterans with missing legs. Others were stricken by polio. But all of them are athletes. These are players in South Sudan's Wheelchair Basketball Association. They don white, blue, and yellow jerseys and roll up and down the court, dribbling, making passes, and shooting layups. They slam into each other going for loose balls, contest for rebounds under the hoop, and race down the court on fast breaks. Gatluak Kwa Luak helped found the team in 2011. He lost his leg while a soldier in the Second Sudanese Civil War in 2000 and learned the sport as a refugee in Kenya. Today, Luwak is one of the most dominant players, dribbling around opponents at will. But it wasn't always so simple.
Wheelchair basketball. It is not easy game. It's very technical. It needs a lot of courage. It needs a lot of mind. Let me say it. You have to be committed.
The game has become an important part of recovering from his war wounds.
I thought it wouldn't go work. But when I try, I got more interesting, and then it worked. Then I realized after it has worked, it has changed bigger part of disability in me to ability. I realize that I can do anything like other people. Disability is not inability.
Many disabled South Sudanese sink into alcoholism and poverty. James Amule, who was stricken with polio when he was 2 years old, says disabled people are passed over for jobs in South Sudan and called Abukareng a slur.
The nickname Abukareng, which means a disabled person. They call you disabled person, which is not supposed to be. I have a name. I need to be called by my name, not by a nickname. As my name is called James Amule, even if you call me that a disabled person, I will not feel like I am a human being.
Already, the sport is changing attitudes. Achwil Malik, Secretary General of the South Sudan Basketball Federation, hopes the wheelchair basketball players will represent South Sudan at this year's Paralympics in Brazil. Competing at that level internationally is something the country's able-bodied team has yet to do.
Of course, giving them a chance to go to Rio de Janeiro will be a big boost to people of South Sudan. They are available. We are all hopeful that South Sudan flag can be raised during the Paralympics.
For now, though, Luwak says he wants to grow the sport at home. For the last 2 years, South Sudan has fought another civil war and produced more wounded veterans.
We are approaching everyone out to have that courage and play wheelchair basketball so that they also begin a new life and realize that they can still do something because they are not longer a part of what they are before. Like me, I have been like that. It's not a curse.
For a nation in need of healing, Luwak and his teammates could be examples of how to move forward. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Juba.
Thanks, Jason. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out my blog. The address is blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. My latest blog post is titled Refugee Athletes at the Rio Olympics. The International Olympic Committee recently announced its first refugee Olympic team, which will compete at the Rio Games in August. 5 of the 10 athletes selected are from South Sudan, and I shine the sunny side of sports spotlight on one of them, 800-meter runner James Nyang Chengjiek. Refugee athletes at the Rio Olympics, my latest blog post. Check it out. Well, tributes continue to pour in for the late, great Muhammad Ali ahead of his funeral on Friday in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. VOA sports reporter Ben Cento joins us once again here in Studio 22. Sporty greetings, Ben.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. We just heard Toddy talking about the NBA Finals and its biggest players. The biggest players also giving their thoughts and reactions to this emotional week in the world of sports with the passing of Muhammad Ali. Superstar LeBron James talks about his admiration for Ali and what he did both in and out of the ring.
As a kid, I gravitated towards him because he was a champion, but I only knew as a kid what he did inside the ring. As I got older and I started to be more knowledgeable about sport in general, and about the guys who paved the way for guys like myself, I understood that he is the greatest of all time, and he was the greatest of all time because of what he did outside of the ring. Obviously, we knew how great of a boxer he was, but I think that was only 20% of what made him as great as he was.
Muhammad Ali was a great role model for many young people in the United States and around the world. The head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Tyronn Lue, says Ali was a true inspiration for his NBA career as both a player and a coach.
Muhammad Ali was a big reason why I was able to achieve so much in my life, and just knowing what he's done for this country, of fighting for human rights, you know, not just black rights, but human rights, and making every kid feel they had a chance to be something special. He really meant a lot to me. I was honored and had the privilege to meet him a few times, and I mean, it just meant the world to me.
Muhammad Ali often used his status at the top of sports to advocate for civil rights. Golden State Warriors superstar and reigning NBA MVP Steph Curry talks about how Ali gave up his prime boxing years because he refused to serve in the Vietnam War for religious and political purposes.
When you love to, you know, have a passion for what you do in boxing, playing basketball, for whatever reason, not be able to kind of take advantage of your prime and the time and work that you put into it, that would be tough for sure. But obviously, he had to do what he needed to do, and that's special.
Meanwhile, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, Steve Kerr, reflects on the social activism of Muhammad Ali, saying he promoted equality for all.
Muhammad Ali was in his prime when I was a kid, 8-10 years old, just after Vietnam, just after the civil rights movement, and he was probably the most prominent athlete of the time as it related to social issues. And so what he did went so far beyond the boxing ring, the sporting arena in general. What he did, not just for African Americans, but for all Americans, in terms of trying to promote equality, in terms of really raising the level of consciousness about what was happening in the country, probably the most influential athlete in the history of our country.
That's Steve Kerr, the head coach of the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors. I'm VOA's Ben Cento. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Ben. Muhammad Ali is also being celebrated in a poem by Dr. Togbana Tipote, Liberia's former Minister of Planning and Economic Affairs. Let's give it a listen.
The Right to Be, a poem in memory of Muhammad Ali, the greatest boxer. Born out of clay, in the light of day, with no relations to Cassius or Rome, no place to call my home, now I'm grown up, but fed up with the slave system forced on me by them, bent on bending my dignity, bent on crushing my integrity, blocking the doors of useful opportunity, spreading injustice with all impunity, determination being my calling through my parental upbringing, I opened the boxing door, working hard from the floor to become the greatest boxer of all, standing tall to no one fall. Moving like a fly, on my determination rely, stinging like a bee, flexing my right to be. From the rumble in the jungle to the cellar in Manila, I remain the greatest, surviving all kinds of tests. Even the test on the Vietnam War that seemed not to thaw, when the biggest democracy with its blend of hypocrisy used the money to test my integrity. Again, I survived with dignity. Through the grace of Allah, the grace of God, without any demeaning order, because I am the greatest, passing all kinds of tests, spreading love and justice for all, for my dignity to stand tall. Yes, I am Muhammad Ali, exercising my right to be.
That's Dr. Togbana Tipote, Liberia's former Minister of Planning and Economic Affairs, with his Muhammad Ali tribute poem, The Right to Be. Meanwhile, my VOA colleague Shaka Sali will pay tribute to Muhammad Ali later Wednesday at 18:30 GMT UTC on his Straight Talk Africa show. Please join Shaka and his panel of guests, including Nnamdi Moeta, yours truly, and former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes, on his special show focusing on Muhammad Ali. Larry Holmes, by the way, was one of only five men to beat Muhammad Ali during his prize-fighting career. The four others were Smokin' Joe Frazier in 1971, Ken Norton in 1973, Leon Spinks in 1978, and Trevor Burbick in Ali's last fight in 1981. Larry Holmes scored a 10th-round technical knockout of Muhammad Ali in 1980. Of those five men I just mentioned who beat Muhammad Ali, only Larry Holmes and Leon Spinks are still alive. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers former Nigerian football player and coach Stephen Keshi, who died of a suspected heart attack Wednesday at age 54. Keshi is one of only two men in history to win the Africa Cup of Nations trophy as both a player and a coach. As a defender, Stephen Keshi lifted the Nations Cup in 1994, and as a head coach, he did it once again in 2013. Football fans all across Nigeria are mourning the death of Stephen Keshi. Kitan Olugbegi is a Nigerian sports manager.
I've heard the news and it's a big blow. It's a big shock to the country. Stephen Keshi was a Nigerian football hero. When he played in the domestic scene, he made his mark at a young age, got into the Super Eagles really young, traveled abroad, went to Cote d'Ivoire before going to Belgium. And Stephen was a leader. He didn't just go abroad himself. He took so many other Nigerians. There's a few Ghanaians that went through him as well. So Stephen was that kind of colossus in Nigerian football. He really cared about the country and he always did his best.
Meanwhile, Otto Mohammed of the Nigeria Football Federation also remembers Stephen Keshi.
Keshi represents everything good. And as a coach, he's in the history books. He'll be remembered having winning as a captain and as a coach. That's one of his great legacies. And then he went on to coach Togo and Mali, which very few have been able to lay their hands on. So that shows you a lot of things about him as a person and his quality.
Stephen Keshi leaves four children. His wife, Kate, died of cancer last year. Once again, if you're just tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, some sad news on this Wednesday. Stephen Keshi, the former Nigerian football player and coach, died of a suspected heart attack at the age of 54. Keshi, one of only two men in history to win the Africa Cup of Nations trophy as both a player and a coach. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, on the note of that last story about the sad passing of Stephen Keshi, we're seeing a lot of social media reactions, some words befitting such a great champion, people saying he was a great champion and a true champion. Some people saying he was a bit of a brawler and a talker. That's their opinion, their two cents. But they said that's how they'll remember him, not the sadness and the suddenness of his passing, but kind of his demeanor and his larger-than-life personality and a lot of mourning, people offering their condolences to his friends and family. So that's sad news getting a lot of reaction on social media today.
Rest in peace, Stephen Keshi. As I mentioned, he does leave four children, and kind of a tragic story in a way, Andrew, in that he lost his wife last year to cancer. So, yeah.
And that's not lost on people. A lot of people saying, how much more could this poor family take? And they're thinking of his children today, for sure.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, big news out of the tennis world that the International Tennis Federation has banned Maria Sharapova from tennis for 2 years after a doping violation. Now, Maria Sharapova, as soon as this happened, went to her Facebook page and wrote up this lengthy post. In fact, she probably had it already prepared. She probably knew ahead of time before they made the announcement because this post went right up. She put this right up on Facebook. And in part of the post, she says that the ITF originally wanted a 4-year ban and that it worked down to 2. And she notes here, you know, one of the headlines on social media, or the big headline on social media, is Maria Sharapova banned for 2 years for doping. But she explains here in the Facebook post, she said, they wanted to ban me for 4 years. The 2 years is because they said, well, she wasn't willingly doing this. It was unintentional. So she's making that point, saying, I want everyone to know this was not an intentional use of performance-enhancing drugs, or this meldonium that she was using. It was unintentional. That being said, she also adds that she is going to appeal this 2-year suspension, and she's hoping it'll be reduced or thrown out because she didn't intend to take these drugs. They weren't previously banned, and then they were. And she actually includes in this Facebook post as well some documents that her lawyers prepared. Again, it's all done ahead of time, I'm sure, explaining how this ITF process works with this tribunal deciding this 2-year ban, so her fans know what the background is. But of course, this is a big topic of conversation on social media. Sharapova's name is trending worldwide. One tweet I saw said, I guess she's still on that, oh, I didn't know what I was doing excuse, so people aren't necessarily buying it.
Okay.
But a lot of people concerned for her career. But, you know, if this two-year ban is upheld, she'll be 31 by the time she gets back to tennis. And unless your name is Serena Williams, if you're a woman in your 30s, you really haven't had a lot of success winning Grand Slams in the past few years. So people saying, well, if she can't get this overturned, perhaps this is the end of her tennis career.
What is your feeling, Andrew? You know, Maria Sharapova clearly in the twilight of her tennis career. Do you think she might put her racket down for good?
You know, I take maybe a cynical view on this, in that she is the highest paid female athlete in the world because of endorsements and all the other, you know, products and ventures she's involved with. I don't think that the ITF would have the highest paid athlete in the world, highest paid female athlete in the world that's a tennis star, be out of the game for 2 years. So I think that maybe this is their statement. They're doing this initially saying 2 years, and then maybe it gets walked back. Maybe it's only 6 months or a year when it's all said and done. But it is certainly her chance to go and win these tournaments is curtailed. And hopefully for her, it gets reduced. But who knows? We'll see.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Getting back to Maria Sharapova, Andrew, you say how she feels this was unintentional, her use of meldonium. And yet this drug has been linked with more than a few other Russian athletes.
Well, that's, I think, where a lot of this skepticism is originating from on social media, where people saying, oh, she's just using that excuse and it's not really genuine, because this has been linked to other Russian athletes. So that's, I think, where a lot of that is coming from. Who knows? I mean, it's one of those things that clearly the ITF had this tribunal. They investigated it. They felt comfortable enough that even if it was unintentional, she violated these rules to get comfortable enough to give her a 2-year ban. But again, whether that sticks or not, we'll see. It may just be one of these kind of statements they're trying to make by saying this is unacceptable, this is the 2-year ban we're handing down, and then maybe it gets walked back through appeal.
Now, with that appeal process, Andrew, is there any possibility that we could see Sharapova at the Rio Olympics?
I don't think so. I don't think it would happen that quickly. So I think that it, you know, maybe by the time of the U.S. Open, but even then, I think that's probably not going to happen. I think probably for the rest of the year she'll be out. And then maybe by 2017 for the Australian Open in January 2017, maybe then we might see her back. It also might be a case, too, where if she realizes the appeal's not going to happen, she might just accept it and say, okay, I'm just going to try to serve this out, and or at least start serving it while the appeal is going on. Hopefully, if they cut it down to a year, then she's already served that time. But no, I don't think we'll be seeing her in Rio. And then the interesting thing is when she comes back, she'll have to build back up her ranking, as we've seen with players who have been out, including Serena Williams or Victoria Azarenka, out with injury instead of suspensions. They start out, you know, ranked in the hundreds just because they haven't played for so long and haven't worked up those ranking points. So she might have to battle back to where she once was.
Andrew, any other topics trending in the sports world?
Yes. Well, you mentioned your Twitter handle a little while ago, and I hope you don't get hacked, but it's been happening quite a lot lately. In the past week, we've seen a lot of big names being hacked on Twitter, including the National Football League. The National Football League account here in the U.S. was hacked, and somebody who hacked it tweeted out that the commissioner, Roger Goodell, had died at age 57. Well, that wasn't true. Roger Goodell is alive and well. The NFL had to go back and say, no, that was not correct. We were hacked. And Tech Insider, the magazine, got an interview with these hackers, and they said that the way that they did this was they hacked into an email account for somebody who runs the NFL Twitter, and they searched Twitter password, and they found the password. That's how they were able to break in. So the public service announcement for all the Sunny Side of Sports listeners out there, change your password, have a strong password, make sure you change it often because you don't want to get hacked. You may not have as high up a social media account as the NFL, but nobody ever wants to get hacked.
Please don't hack me if you're listening tonight. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew. We'll see you on Thursday.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the June 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, has granted KSH 380 million to Kenyan innovators as part of its Feed the Future Kenya Innovation Engine, or KIE, an effort to reward and improve agriculture-based innovations. To date, more than 57,000 rural households have benefited from KIE-supported innovations and attracted nearly $1.4 million in public and private sector investment. At a launch held May 31st in Nairobi, the agency granted funds to 10 local firms to transform simple agriculture initiatives into valuable projects in Kenya. Such projects have played key roles in improving incomes in individual households, while at the same time reducing poverty levels and improving food security among communities. Following a vetting process, six of these pilot rollout grants have already been awarded, and the Innovation Engine is poised to grant funding and technical assistance to an additional four advanced innovations, said Karen Freeman, the Mission Director, USAID Kenya and East Africa. Kenya Innovation Engine is a five-year program implemented in collaboration with USAID partner Land O'Lakes International Development that identifies, nurtures, and brings to scale innovative, private sector-oriented solutions to food security, undernutrition, and poverty. The Innovation Engine collaborates with entrepreneurs who design new concepts, products, and services to maximize their commercial value. The initiative was launched in 2012 with funding from USAID. Kenya Innovation Engine has so far provided seed funding and technical expertise to 22 innovations with a promise of more support for food security and social support initiatives. This initiative has contributed substantively to building the businesses and institutions involved in these areas, said Ms. Freeman. Among the benefits achieved by the initiative, more than 57,000 households reached by new technologies during the proof-of-concept stage, 30,000 farmers made a repeat purchase of the innovation. Smallholders have recorded $6.7 million in incremental sales since adopting these innovations, and enterprises created 1,458 jobs at the proof-of-concept innovation testing stage. The United States is proud to work with its partner Kenya to improve agriculture for the benefit of Kenyans and the Africa region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.